It always asks, man. Gotta be ready for it.
That caught on recording. All right. Welcome back to the Mountain West Connection podcast. That's MWCConnection.com. Stuffed up tonight, and there's no Jeremy. So with me for the second straight Sunday, it's like we're going to have our own team name and our own podcast and everything. How's it hanging, Matt?
Well, I've had better weekends. I watched a lot of really agonizing football. How about you, Chris? How are you? Are you there?
Highlights of agonizing football. I actually spent most of my Saturday at a concert called So, obviously, Mount West laid an egg for a second straight week in life out the state. You still there?
Yeah, you're just cutting in and out a lot. I don't know if it's...
Oh, okay. Does it sound better if I get closer?
Hopefully. Fingers crossed.
My question to you was, even though the Mountain West got kind of blown out again this week, it didn't seem as bad as last week. Yeah, thoughts, yes or no?
I think my initial reaction is to say yes. There were a couple of games.
Outside of the San Diego State loss.
Yeah, they weren't getting blown out the same way that they were in some of the games last weekend. I think as we go through and start talking about some of these games, what we'll find out is that the common theme of the weekend was kind of giving games away, kind of snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. Hello? Hey, Chris, are you still there?
Good, experiencing technical difficulty. Well, why okay. Is my...
Should I keep talking?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I should keep talking?
Yeah, just go ahead and keep talking.
All right. Well, you know, as I was saying, it was not a totally, you know, they didn't exactly cover themselves with glory across the conference this week. You know, the upside is, you know, maybe some teams are seeing some resolution to some of the questions that they entered the season with. You know, other teams may be facing a few other questions that they didn't anticipate. I don't know how long I need to stall for exactly. But I think we have a clearer picture, at least 3 weeks in, as conference play starts next week, of who we might expect to be in the hunt and who we might expect to be out of it going forward.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. So, yeah, actually, absolutely. Very, very good. If I just go in and out, just go ahead and kind of take over for me. I'm going to try and get this thing resolved. I don't know why I'm having such network issues.
All right, no worries.
So, yeah, let's go ahead and start with the first bright spot of the Mountain West this weekend was Boise State dominating Idaho State, FCS Idaho State, 52-0. And I'll be honest. The big thing I look for here is not the blowout score, not the 50 burger, but the zero.
Are you talking about like defense or lack of turnovers or?
Yeah. There's zero score. Like the final score was 52-0. In this game, Ryan Finley breaks his 8 weeks. So now we've got a quarterback controversy. Boise State approached the quarterback levels of offense.
Yeah, you know, the injury really kind of forced their hand, and both quarterbacks actually played pretty well regardless. You know, Thomas Stewart was 9 of 13 for 69 yards, and ironically enough, the only passing touchdown, Brett Rippon, who I'm sure a lot of people might have expected to not see a lot of action this year, came in and was maybe even better. He went 8 of 9 for 126 yards. I didn't see a lot of this game personally. I don't know about you, Chris. Did you happen to – how much of this game did you happen to see?
I watched the whole game.
Yeah?
Yeah. So as the game got more and more blown out, then I switched over to New Mexico, Arizona State.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed especially in the second half, you know, I'm looking at the drive chart and you're seeing touchdown, 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 five in a row. So Boise State looked like they were kind of doing what they always try and do. They had more than their fair share of pass breakups. The secondary definitely held up their end, because Idaho State, we all know they're kind of a powerhouse passing attack, but their quarterback, Michael Sanders, only completed 50% of the passes. And the guy who replaced him, Tanner Geller, also completed just over 50% of his passes. So they weren't terribly efficient throwing the ball. And so I think that, you know, if you're Boise State, you're going to have to count that as a win, don't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So then my question to you, and maybe as me as the Boise State fan should answer this, next week against Virginia, do you start Brett Rippon or do you start Tommy Stewart?
Oh, that's a good question. I think, you know, I would imagine that a lot of Boise State fans might just want the future to start now and start Brett Rippon. But if you have a guy in Thomas Stewart who, you know, he played pretty well, I think, you know, if it were me, if I were making that decision, I would probably start Stewart. You know, Virginia's not a great ACC team. As you know, they almost lost to William and Mary. They gave up, you know, the old joke, 29 points to two guys. So I think that, you know, you don't necessarily have to put pressure on Rippon to start right now. If, you know, Stewart struggles, then, you know, go ahead and bring him in. But if there's no hurry, I don't see why they would do that.
See, I'm actually a different thought. I'm kind of more along the thought that, you know, you have – now you just burned the true freshman's red shirt. He went 8 for 9, had some great stats. Even though he didn't have to do much, if this is the guy we've been waiting for, then play him. And use Tommy Stewart as like a wildcat formation, because that's where Stewart really excelled.
Yeah, I guess you have a good point. And I think no matter who's under center, what, you know, Broncos fans should really be pleased about is the fact that, you know, after getting stifled last week by BYU, the running game really broke out too. You know, I'm seeing that they averaged nearly 6 yards a carry and racked up nearly 350 yards on the ground. And they got a lot of different guys in on the action. You know, Jeremy McNichols, 3 more touchdowns. Corey Young had 70 yards and he averaged, you know, 7.5 yards per carry. So, you know, I think that that's the more encouraging thing to me, which I think makes whoever's under center a little less important than it might be otherwise. I'm not entirely sure where Chris went, so I'll just keep going. I think that Boise State could also be encouraged by that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say they were also played really well on third down. You know, they were 9 of 15 on third down, and they were able to convert a fourth down opportunity as well. And they were really proficient in the red zone, especially. You know, 7 touchdowns and 8 tries is going to be, you know, pretty good no matter who you're playing.
Matt.
Yes. I'm here.
Matt.
Yes. Yeah.
Hey.
Yes.
So, what I... we'll go on to the next game because we're going to keep this going. Okay. And if I cut out, if I cut out.
Yeah. You kind of like you're doing right now.
Okay. Next game.
Yeah, what's the next one?
Next game.
You there, Chris?
New Mexico, Arizona State.
All right.
Yes. You can't. This is make.
Okay, I'm not totally sure whether it's me cutting out or whether it's Chris cutting out, but I think he said we're going to talk about New Mexico next. You know, they had a rough one against the Arizona State Sun Devils. They lost 34-10 on Friday night. They weren't really in it past the first quarter, I don't think. You know, especially after halftime, they weren't really able to get a lot going on the ground. You know, Arizona State especially was able to kind of lock down what they do best, holding them to only 184 yards on the ground. If you're New Mexico, that's not the figure that you want, even if you are, you know, kind of dominating time of possession and, you know, getting a lot of third down chances, not necessarily, you know, taking advantage of those third down opportunities and converting them, keeping drives alive. Chris, are you there?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So we're going to, okay. So you started keeping on going. I could hear everything you're saying. So the problem is me and not you.
Okay.
So just keep your eye on the chat.
Okay.
But yeah, so we're New Mexico, Arizona State, right?
Yes.
Did you watch this game?
I did not get a chance to. I do not have CBS Sports Network at home.
Okay, so this game was interesting. I hope not, which is funny to say because we kept saying New Mexico's going to have a very effective offense, but that's not what's happening.
Yeah,
but that's not what's happening.
All right, you tell me what happened then. Because all I really have...
Bob Davey... What?
I was going to say, all I really have is the box score in front of me, so maybe telling me something a little bit different than what actually happened.
So Bob Davey cannot make his mind whether or not to start Lamar Jordan or Austin Appiah. He plays the one in the first and third quarters, and he plays the other in the second and fourth quarters.
Right now... Sitting president of federal prison.
Auto video is the devil.
Okay. Right now, Apodaca is the better passer, but Jordan basically plays with the team better. Does that make sense?
Yes. Are you there, Chris?
So,
okay.
The other thing that is troubling in this game was this 17-7 towards the end of the third quarter. And New Mexico just couldn't finish. Is that New Mexico? You get a few more playmakers. You get a little bit stronger at the secondary. I think they're going to be able to win some more games.
Yeah, but I mean, you and Jeremy, I know you were kind of driving the New Mexico train heading into the season. How long is that going to take for that to come around?
Well, I mean, they should have beat Tulsa, and the fact that they didn't show up against Tulsa really concerns me. Because despite Tulsa for hanging around with Oklahoma for three quarters, Tulsa is not a Boise State or a BYU for that matter. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not a complete, I don't want to say elite group of five status for them. They're close, but they're not there yet either.
Uh-huh.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
All right, so New Mexico lost, kept it close, but, you know, there are things. Next game, Jake Butt in Michigan beat UNLV 28-7.
Oh, that's never going to get old.
No, absolutely not. You want to go ahead and talk about this game?
Yeah, first things first, we've got to milk that joke for everything we can, because I don't think Michigan can be anywhere on a Mountain West schedule again anytime soon. But, you know, this is more about UNLV, and what we can say about the Rebels is that, at least, you know, from my point of view, I watched most, if not all, of this game. And for the second week in a row, they really kind of hung tough against, a decent, if not Power 5 opponent. The offense, again, had some trouble getting some traction, the running game especially, held under 100 yards for the second week in a row. But, you know, what you can say is, you know, Blake Decker stood in and took some shots, even though his box score isn't exactly pretty. You know, only 8 of 16, only 96 yards, a touchdown, and a couple of interceptions. But, you know, you saw flashes from UNLV. Devontae Boyd got his 3 catches and a touchdown. The defense made a couple of heads-up plays on Jake Rudock. And the passing line. Yeah, because Jake Rudock, you know, he had an okay game. He was only 4 from 21 and 123 yards. You know, I kind of like where this team might be going long term. It may not necessarily be pretty in 2015, but, you know, I think maybe I've done enough talking. What did you think of what this game looked like?
How much the defense didn't give up garbage time points at the end. I mean, 28-7 is a blowout, but it's, I mean, remember the spread was 34 in this game.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if you're talking about that and you're talking about the fact that UNLV's defense has just been utterly awful over the years, if UNLV's defense is not giving up, and yeah, they're giving up points, but they're giving up just enough to keep the offense around in the game. If the offense was more competent in this game, basically that the receivers were able to get open more, or Decker was a better quarterback, UNLV would have hung around a lot more, and even more than just hanging around. It's one of those things that there's hope for the future. Now they need to work on their offense. They got the defense part, and obviously it's still not great, still not even good. But they're focusing on it, and it's not as bad as what it used to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think you especially have to give some shout-outs to the secondary, not only, you know, Penny Vea, but, you know, someone like Fred Wilson, who had a really heads-up interception on the tip drill. Kenny Keyes, who, you know, had one of the 2 tackles for loss. You know, because when you consider that, you know, they were fighting an uphill battle all game long, I'm looking at the average field position numbers. You know, UNLV on average are starting from their own 22, and the Wolverines were starting from their own 36. So, you know, being able to, you know, put the clamps on the Wolverines offense like they did, you know, in my opinion, that's pretty encouraging, since, you know, they're going to be heading into conference play, and we still don't know who exactly the breakout offenses are going to be. So that might help them stay competitive week in and week out, even if the offense kind of struggles to find some momentum.
Yeah, and now, especially now since, you know, the West could essentially be very up in the air with how bad San Diego State looked. Let's move on to the next game, Air Force Michigan State. my gut overall reaction, if you read that piece that you and I were basically kind of making snarky comments, and that's where I said we were more hating ass Spurrier than hating ass Spurrier. Yeah. Air Force, it was disappointing to start the game. It looked promising after 14-7 first quarter, but then it just kind of went downhill. And yeah, you picked it up at the end, but it still wasn't nearly enough. And I think Air Force is still sneaky good. I think Michigan State is a playoff team. But I think Air Force getting cut, getting so many cut block penalties that they normally don't get, I think that killed them, and I think they just need to tighten up on those.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely right. You know, they got hit for 7 penalties, but for 95 yards. So even though they were averaging 5.5 per carry, you know, which is right around where you want to be if you're Air Force in that kind of situation, you know, picking up those penalties really hurt them at times. You know, Carson Roberts actually acquitted himself well regardless. He was 6 of 9 throwing the ball for 149 yards, pitched in another 50 on the ground. Another thing that I think it came down to is that they weren't able to contain Michigan State's receiver. Who was it, Aaron Burbridge?
Yes.
Yeah, because, you know, he scored 3 times in a row, you know, in the second quarter going into the third quarter. And, you know, that was pretty much the game right there. You know, Air Force, like you said, fought back. You know, they made a game of it in the fourth quarter. They just weren't able to close the gap.
Anything else we need to say about this game?
Not that I can think of, no. And one other thing they might want to try and clean up is, you know, they lost a couple fumbles as well, which, you know, didn't help their upset chances. Because, you know, Michigan
State, yeah, absolutely.
Michigan State, you know, took those points. They got, you know, at least one touchdown off of it, and they were able to, you know, really kind of control the game in the second half.
Another thing of note is that Air Force as an air raid offense was limited to 247 yards on the ground. So that definitely is problematic.
You mean in the air?
No.
Oh, Air Force State had 200.
Only Air Force only had 247 rushing yards.
Oh, okay. I'm looking at it. It says they had 279.
Sorry, that's still not a high number for a triple option team.
You know, one other thing to keep in mind is that, you know, they looked pretty good on run defense, which you might not expect from an Air Force defense. They only gave up, you know, 77 yards rushing and 1.8 yards per carry. You know, so they were able to, you know, get in the backfield a couple times. You know, they sacked Connor Cook 3 times. I think there's a lot to like about this Air Force team. I think they kind of gave it away this Saturday.
Excellent. Okay, so let's move on to the next game. Next game is Nevada at Texas A&M. Texas A&M defeats Nevada 44-27 in what is closer game than originally I thought. I thought Texas A&M was going to cover the spread, but Nevada hung around in there. And that partially makes me think that this Nevada team can possibly sneak a Western Division bid.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, they you know, they had a pretty balanced offense, all things considered. You know, the running game still, you know, struggled to get a little bit of traction. You know, James Butler averaged over 6 yards a carry. He had 100 yards. Don Jackson, who I think we all had high hopes for coming into the year, kind of scuffled. You know, he scored the only touchdown on the ground, but he only averaged, you know, just over 3 yards a carry. Tyler Stewart also had his best game of the year so far, considering the circumstances. But, you know, what I think stood out to me was the fact that, you know, Nevada's receivers might be a little bit better than I thought they were coming into the year. What do you think?
Well, you always had Hassan Henderson, who is always a good receiver. But I think you're absolutely right. I think some of the other receivers are starting to come around more. But, you know, in this game, they were really never in it, but they never took themselves out of it, and that's what I like. It is a nice fight. Especially Stewart looks like he's ready to lead this pistol offense, and can lead it effectively. The problem is, can that translate into wins for Nevada?
So if there's nothing else to talk about this game.
Yeah, I think, you know, one last thing I'll bring up is, you know, Nevada, I think, can be encouraged by the fact that they held A&M to only 4 of 12 on third downs. But they'll need to try and improve the red zone defense a little bit because they did give up seven. Actually, no, I'm looking at it. They only gave up 4 touchdowns and 8 trips to the red zone. So that's actually not bad, you know?
Yeah, no, that's actually really good. It's once again showing it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, I think it's another game where, you know, they were competitive, and I think a lot of people maybe didn't expect them to. I think actually Jeremy might have called the arc of this game in your guys' preview podcast earlier in the week.
He called it what?
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
What did he call
it? I'm sorry, I think you're cutting out again.
Hang on. Is Chris Peterson making Washington good?
Maybe. I mean, that's well within the realm of possibility. I mean, he's got the track record to say that, yeah, that might be the case.
Right, but with the freshman quarterback and with all the issues that the team had last year, and then with all losing your 3 first-round NFL picks and rebuilding this year, they kept it closer versus Boise State, which many people did not predict them to do, and kept Boise State to only 16 points. Dominate Sac State last week, and then just all of a sudden just destroy Utah State this week, 31-17. Yes, we know Utah State does not have wide receivers. We're well aware of that. But Washington kept Utah State to 83 yards total and 171 yards total passing. I mean, even with Hunter Sharp coming back in the game, and he was the most effective receiver, he still wasn't doing much.
Yeah, well, I mean, you said, you know, Sharp came back. This was his season debut, and he actually did lead the Aggies in receiving 6 catches, 74 yards. What I want to ask you is, how worried should we be about Chucky Keaton at this point?
I'd be pretty worried. Honestly, I'd be ready to bench him.
Really?
Yeah. And really, it's just because he's not really shown the leadership ability that he normally does in past years. Mm-hmm. And I wonder that if by putting in the new quarterback and basically forcing him to basically coach more rather than play more, if that'll A, kind of help him step up those leadership skills again, and B, maybe kind of wake him up. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. But, you know, his struggles, you know, they don't necessarily explain the struggles that Utah State had on defense yesterday. You know, when you're giving up an uncharacteristic 442 yards.
Exactly. Like, it's can't all fall on.
You know, and Washington was able to do most of their damage through the air. You know, Jake Browning had himself a pretty good game. It was 368 yards. You know, and just, you know, despite all the different kinds of quarterback controversies still going on throughout the conference, you know, what kind of answers are Utah State going to find going into conference play if, you know, they can't stop a true freshman like Browning?
Well, you know, Browning has really shown himself to be a better – he's grown the last 3 weeks. And so that's part of it. But at the same time, you're absolutely right. I mean, substitute Jake Browning for, you know, I don't want to say Maxwell Smith, but either Maxwell Smith or Chasem Virgil or Zach Greenlee or Brett Rypien, and you can see that Utah State's going to be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what you can keep in mind, at least so far, is, you know, Utah State's – this was, you know, their worst game as far as, you know, passing yards allowed, rather. You know, at least on the bright side is they have a really good run defense. They're still only giving up just over 100 yards to game a game to date. But, you know, that's a spot of concern, I think, especially with a team like Boise State who, you know, maybe they might lead with the pass. And if Utah State wants to figure out how to beat them one of these years, they're going to have to figure out how to stop the pass.
Right, absolutely. And maybe this is a case of Chris Peterson knows how to beat Utah State. So he basically just took his playbook and adapted and dominated that game too. But I highly doubt that's the case.
Well, when was the last time that a Chris Peterson team played Utah State? Because it wasn't when they were in the Mountain West.
Last year, yeah, absolutely. It was last two seasons
ago. 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe.
They played them.
Yeah, okay, you're right. I'm thinking of my timeline's a little bit off.
That's okay. So, next game. Oh, boy, Colorado State.
Oh, man.
How in this?
Yeah, CBS Sports Network was preempting the start of, you know, Fresno State, Utah, which, you know, we'll get to in a few minutes, but... You know, on the one hand, maybe I should have been thankful. On the other hand, having to watch this team kind of give away the game like that was really brutal.
Yeah, and first of all, Wyatt Bryan, Colorado State's kicker, 1-for-4 on field goals that day.
Yeah, not good.
Yeah, you need to be basically practicing all week, young man. Rashard Higgins did exactly what we were thinking he was going to do. 8 receptions, 125 yards, 1 touchdown. And Nick Stevens didn't do that bad except for the 2 picks. So it was really snatching defeat from the jaws of victory.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you there. You know, this is another instance where, you know, it seemed like a lot like last
week,
where they, you know, they had the lead for most of the game and then just couldn't hold on to it. You know, obviously they had to rally late just to be able to tie the game, and then, you know, hashtag college kickers happened at the end of regulation. But, you know, they owned a really decisive time of possession advantage. You know, they held the ball for 36 minutes. They ran for, I believe, you know, nearly twice as many yards as Colorado did. Dalen Dawkins, again, had himself a pretty good game, 118 yards and a score. Where is the problem besides special teams? This team should have probably won by at least double digits, right?
Yeah, absolutely. This game was 14-0 in the first quarter, and if Colorado didn't get back into it, we could have easily seen, I don't know, a 30-10 blowout or something of that sort. I mean, just if you have a rival team on the ropes that early in the game, you can't do anything stupid. You just, and it feels credit Seifo Lufau for getting the team back in this game, though. For Colorado.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like the Buffaloes were, you know, they didn't do particularly well on special teams either, besides the field goal that they missed at the end of regulation. You know, Diego Gonzalez also missed another one right before halftime. That was blocked. But, you know, the fact remains, you know, I'm looking at the drive chart, and, you know, Colorado State misses their first field goal, and Colorado answers immediately with a 65-yard touchdown. You know, they throw an interception on the ensuing drive, and Colorado is able to march down, and they miss that field goal, but they have a chance to score right before the half. And then, you know, they score, they have the interception early in the fourth quarter, and, you know, Colorado, you know, takes that back for a touchdown. So, you know, they kind of let Colorado hang around, and they paid the price for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that pick six doesn't happen. Who knows if they would have scored or not, but it really would have I think it really would have shifted the focus of the game, perhaps. Yeah. All right. Next game. Oh, my gosh. This game's keeping – Oregon State should not be this good. San Jose State should not be this bad. What's going on? Quarterback controversy. State cannot make their up their mind in –
just a second. Are you still there, Chris? Okay, well, I'm assuming Chris may have cut off for just a moment, but I think what he was saying is that the Spartans played three different quarterbacks. Each of them played to, you know, various degrees of effectiveness. You know, Joe Gray kind of took a step backwards from the last couple weeks, only 4 of 10. He had the only touchdown, but he also threw an interception. Malik Watson saw some action. He was 8 of 14, 57 yards. You know, Kenny Potter may have taken another step forward. You know, he was 8 of 9 for 72 yards. But when you put that stat line together, it's not pretty. You know, you're looking at, you know, 20 of 33 for 149 yards, a touchdown, and two interceptions. And, you know, if San Diego State really wants to compete, I think they're going to have to make up their mind sooner rather than later.
Yeah, Tyler Irving is doing very, very well for himself. But outside of that, I mean, San Jose State needs a quarterback. They can't just be playing the quarterback all the time.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it was kind of the same story as last week. You know, they threw, you know, two interceptions, and each time Oregon State was able to turn it into 7 points. And that was the same thing that kind of doomed them last week against Air Force.
Well, the other thing that doomed them is I haven't seen the last time Oregon State rushed for 300 yards.
Right? Where did that come from? I guess you were asking about Storm Woods in the preview podcast, and there he was. 150 yards and a score.
Well, the quarterback, 16 carries for 114 yards, 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, I think maybe San Jose State's revival of their run defense may have been a little bit exaggerated.
One game does not a defense make.
I guess not.
So San Jose State, can they come back in this conference at least this year?
Well, I mean, if you're asking me now, I think that, you know, the West after the last couple weeks is wide open. I wouldn't actually know who the favorite would be at this point because, you know, no team
has won
the last couple of weeks. Oh, well, we'll get to them.
what? Did I say something?
Yeah, I think San Jose State, even despite how they've looked in the first few weeks, they've got as good a chance as anybody in that division.
Hell, even UNLV.
Let's not go that far.
Oh, you know. Let's see. They lost by a touchdown to a team that gave Ohio State fits. They lose to a top 15 team, you know, who probably are overranked, but, you know, still managed, even in a blowout, did not get completely blown out. And then they lose to a decent Michigan team and just their defense hanged around there. Yeah, absolutely. Translate some of those.
They're going to have to figure out how to keep Blake Decker upright if they want any shot at all.
They have to figure out how to make Blake Decker a better passer if they want any shot at all. But that's beside the point.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go. Face plant of the day.
Uh-oh.
South Alabama.
Oh, man. I mean, I don't want to be too hard on Aztecs fans, but what happened?
What happened was, first of all, Donnell Pumphrey only limited on 28 carries to 102 yards. Mm-hmm. Maxwell Smith is horrible. I don't know who Lloyd Mills is. I guess he's a receiver. Yeah, it looks like he's a receiver.
I think he's their nominal number one receiver.
Oh.
Although he only had one catch for 6 yards.
Well, there you go. I just – wow. I just and hey, I called it before the season though. South Alabama, this was a game I but I was figured and you know.
Should have made it your stupid upset pick, man.
Yeah, right.
I mean, when you were talking about Maxwell Smith having SEC experience, what you neglected to mention is that he had SEC experience at Kentucky.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he, you know, 3 weeks in, based on what I've seen of the Aztecs so far, it doesn't seem like he's the answer. You know, he was completing less than 50% of his passes again. You know, he didn't throw any interceptions this time, but he only had one touchdown, only 158 yards. But, you know, if you're San Diego State at this point, is there any point in trying to switch gears and finding another quarterback, or do you just stick with Maxwell Smith and hope he gets better when conference play rolls around?
Well, I don't know what's going on with San Diego State's defense, but actually one of the Twitter questions that's we were asked before this podcast – from at Aztec Devin, what is up with what's the issue with SDSU's offensive line?
Their offensive line?
What?
Their offensive line? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Well, you know, I think some of it maybe has to.
Can you bring up how many sacks they gave up?
They gave up only 2 sacks. But they also gave up 7 tackles for loss. And they were able, and South Alabama was also able to force 2 fumbles, both by the same guy, Devin Earl. I mean, it was a little bit mystifying. You know, I didn't get to see all of this game. I watched pretty much most of the first half. And they were just kind of giving up inexplicable big plays from what I could see. You know, when South Alabama scored right before the half, it was on a Hail Mary, I think, right before halftime. And I think without that, obviously, it might be a different game, because if they score right after halftime, they're not scoring to tie the game. They're still trailing at that point. But, I mean, if you're looking at the scoring plays for the Jaguars, you know, 46 yards, 74-yard run, 57-yard pass, that's pretty uncharacteristic for the San Diego State defense. And, you know, I know that Jake Felley didn't play. I believe he was in a car accident earlier in the week. But, you know, his absence can't explain all of the big plays that this secondary, which was supposed to be pretty good going into it, going into the season, and I still think they're probably going to be pretty good. Maybe it was just an off day. Maybe the Jaguars just caught them off guard.
Question. Should San Diego State be allowed to remain in the Mountain West?
Well, I mean, who are we going to invite? Are we going to invite Idaho?
You know, let's not be that hasty.
They almost lost to Wolford, you know?
They did almost lose to Wolford. That was ridiculous.
Yeah. Let's at least keep the team in the conference that can beat an FCS team every so often.
You hear that? UNLV and others and Wyoming?
Yeah, that was unintentional. I'm sorry. I might have a little bit there.
Hating ass Matt over here.
Right.
Speaking of Wyoming... So this was fun. 31-14, Washington State beats Wyoming. Cameron Kaufman, coming out party. 25-36, 296 yards, 2 touchdowns, but 1 pick. Big nails.
Still there?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think... Well, Chris is kind of
sounding like the team shows 113 yards because Cameron Kaufman.
I think you're still cutting in and out a little bit.
Am I still here?
Yeah, you kind of cut out for just a second. I'm not sure what you were saying about Kaufman. We did hear
Kaufman lost some major yards.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, Brian Hill also had himself another very good game. You know, 139 yards, 7 yards a carry. It's just kind of too bad that Wyoming doesn't seem to have a defense, which was kind of the same thing we were talking about last week. You know, not only because, you know, Washington State got theirs through the air, as they are wont to do pretty much every week. You know, Luke Falk also had a 300-yard game. But it's probably not a good sign when you're also giving up, you know, 11 yards a carry to, you know, the one guy running the football. You know, and maybe that was the difference right there. I don't know. I didn't get to see a whole lot of this game. Did you?
No, but here's the thing that baffles me. Wyoming outgained Washington State in this game. They out time of possession them. They lost the turnover battle. They out first downed them. So what was going on? From what I can see here, I mean, Wyoming can't finish. Seems like Wyoming can't finish plays. 9 plays, 41 yards, missed field goal. Okay. 8 plays, 34 yards, and you punt. Then I don't know what hell happened here. 6 plays, 59 yards, 37 seconds, and then it was halftime. So either they didn't get a playoff there was a 42-yard pass. I'm guessing it was a Hail Mary, but this game was derpy in all the right wrong places. Fumble after 38 yards on a deep drive. Interception. And then they went to the end of the game, went 40 yards, and they just couldn't. So they're running clock like they want to. They're sustaining drives, but they just can't score points off of it.
Yeah, it seemed like, you know, it was a competitive game going into the fourth quarter, just looking at the play-by-play. And it was those two turnovers in the fourth quarter that really kind of doomed the team. You know, Tanner Gentry had a fumble right around midfield that Washington State was able to, you know, they were able to turn it into at least 3 points. And then later on, I believe Kaufman threw an interception. And he threw an interception. Washington State, you know, turned that into another 6 points. And, you know, that was really the game right there. So, you know, Wyoming may have played a little bit better than last week. But I think this is still a team that has a ways to go before they're going to be competitive in conference.
Yeah, absolutely. So speaking of competitive in conference, how about your Bulldogs?
How about them Bulldogs?
They sort of were competitive in the fourth quarter with Utah.
Yeah, I think, you know, when they called for the blackout, I didn't think they meant, you know, blacking out the offense.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Martise Waller did very, very little in this game. Chasen Virgil was not good. But, hey, Zach Greenlee came in. 6 for 10.
See, okay,
144 yards.
Here's the thing that I wrote in the recap is that, you know, Chasen Virgil, his box score may not look pretty, you know, he was only 11 of 25 for 97, but he actually looked, in my opinion, a lot better than he did last week against Ole Miss. He didn't make any real big mistakes. Like, if you remember last week when he threw the interception right to the middle linebacker, you know, he didn't do anything like that last night. It was just really weird because the play calling was super conservative for some reason. More than a few times I could count, you know, 5 yard slants on like 3rd and 8, you know, they were really leaning on the receivers to try and make plays. And Utah was just playing really good defense. You know, and the offense really kind of stalled out. And then once Greenlee came into the game, you know, his box score looks a lot better. He was 6 of 10 for 3 scores, 144 yards. But if you watch the game, the play calling was a lot different. They actually took shots down the field, which they weren't really doing with Virgil. And so I honestly don't know what the coaches are doing at this point.
It's a good question.
You know, because, you know,
I have to tread very carefully because I now have a Coach Giroux's son following me on Twitter, I think.
Oh, yeah. Well, so he follows me too. So. Oh. I apologize in advance to anybody in the DeRuiter family, but you know, when, you know, last week against Ole Miss, you have a really run-heavy offense to begin with. Zach Greenlee hardly gets any chances to throw the football, and then all of a sudden you yank him from the game. And Virgil, you know, looks pretty good. He looks a little raw. He looks like a true freshman. And then, you know, you turn around, you face another pretty good defense in Utah, and it's kind of the exact opposite. You know, you kind of put the clamps on Virgil. You don't let him take very many shots down the field. And then, you know, when you're down three scores, then Greenlee comes in the game and he starts throwing it all over the place. I just don't understand the logic behind that.
Well, you know, maybe it'll become clear as the season rolls on. I just think, at least in the fourth quarter, it kind of gave me hope for Fresno State.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's just, it's been a long time since all three phases of the game really kind of came together at the same time. You know, yesterday it was really about the run defense not being able to hold up. You know, they were pounding them early and often with Devontae Booker. He finished with over 200 yards total offense, and he finished with a couple of scores. They really kind of pushed the front seven around, which I didn't expect. Kendall Thompson he looked at least a little bit limited throwing the football, but, you know, he didn't have to make that many plays down the field because they were punishing the Bulldogs up front. You know, obviously when Utah's going 13 of 19 on third down and then 3 for 3 on fourth down, that's not an accident. You know what I mean? And then, you know, special teams really kind of betrayed the Bulldogs too, because, you know, they made a couple of really good plays early on. It was the opening kickoff to Mari Scott, forced a fumble. But the offense can only turn that into 3 points. And then, you know, later on, the kick worked to perfection, and they were able to turn that into points. But then you turn around and you give up a punt return touchdown, and you give up a kick return touchdown, and you kind of give away all those gains. That's not something that you expect to see every week. But that's one of those things that crept up. And, you know, despite the shady turnovers, there was some controversy as to how legitimate the fumble that Virgil had actually was, and how legitimate the fumble that Damari Scott had on the kickoff return. But when you're giving up big plays like that, there's really no excuse for it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so let's move on to the last game of the night, and then we'll talk just a little bit longer, folks. So Hawaii over UC Davis, 47-27. Again, big win over FCS team needed, but that puts Hawaii at 2-1, which it's been forever since they've been 2-1. Paul Harris had a good game on ground, 11 carries, 147 yards. Just seemed everything was clicking for Hawaii.
Yeah, I think, you know, what's most encouraging for the Warriors is the fact that Max Wittick, you know, did what you would have expected him to do. You know, 17 of 24, 272 yards, 2 scores. You know, the receiving core had a pretty nice game. You know, you had 2 guys over 100 yards with a score apiece, Devin Stubblefield and Marcus Kemp. And I think you could also be encouraged by the defense. You know, you had 2 guys, Kennedy Tulima Sialii. Did I get that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He had 2 tackles for loss. Julian Jenner also had 2 tackles for loss. So, you know, the Stars really played well. And I think that if Hawaii, like you said earlier, is going to be competitive in the division, you know, they're going to need their Stars to play well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, I don't think we have to talk about that game too much more. It's not like we're purposely ignoring you, Hawaii. It's just what we've learned, big wins over FCS teams. We don't learn much from them. But guess what? You have one of the few winning records in the conference right now. Which, how many thought that we'd be saying that? Sort of weird. Thank you. So now, if I were to pick 2 teams right now, who are your front runners for the West Division? Who are they? Go ahead and answer. I'm going to go grab a tissue real quick.
Okay, well, I know that I had said before the season on the preview podcast, I think I had said Boise and San Diego State. Even despite the fact that, you know, Ryan Finley is going to be out for a long period of time, I still like the Broncos to take the Mountain Division. The West, oh, man, you may as well roll a six-sided die and just go with whatever logo comes up. I think, you know, I don't like to change my predictions if I don't have to, so I may regret this in a month, but I'm still going to say that San Diego State's the team to beat in that division because they still have Danelle Pumphrey, who, you know, hasn't been chopped liver so far. He's probably going to get his in conference play, and the defense probably isn't going to have many weeks like they did yesterday. So I'm going to stick with my original prediction.
Fair enough. Yeah, right now I'm tempted to stick to my original prediction, but I'm going to throw in a surprise. I'm going to go ahead and say I think Nevada has become the next team to possibly win the division if San Diego State does not.
Really?
Which pains me to say.
I know, you hate Nevada.
I hate Nevada. Yeah, absolutely.
I think the thing that back though is the fact that their running game has been a little bit inconsistent in the early going.
Yeah, but if it's more consistent than San Diego State's offensive line and their defense giving up tons of points, you got to go with minimal stuff.
Yeah, I suppose you have a point. I would have felt bad if I changed my prediction because I know that I made a lot of Boise State fans happy because I was like the one guy who thought they would actually win the conference again. So you're welcome, Broncos Nation.
That's it?
Yeah, I think so, unless you had anything else.
All right, well, let's go ahead and finish this up. Once again, my name is Chris Hondros. That was Matt Kennerly with us tonight. No Jeremy tonight. You've been listening to the Mountain West Connection podcast. I have bad allergies and a bad connection, so I sound like crap.
I have a bad football team. Don't feel too bad.
What?
I have a bad football team, so don't feel too bad.
You know, yeah, exactly. Things could be worse.
Yeah.
Forget my health. Bad football teams are the worst.
I know.
At Matt. Right. Did I get that right?
I think you cut out, but just in case, it's at @MattK_FS.
Excellent. Yep. Totally got it. And remember to tweet us on at @MWCConnection.com. Listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio. SoundCloud. And we're gonna have be back.
Okay, I think he may have cut out again. I'm assuming he meant to say that he and Jeremy will be back sometime in midweek.